This is Phil Rowe.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
So we have the scientists in the studio, and that either means test tubes, Bunsen burners, but health and safety would be right on top of us if we did something like that. Instead, this afternoon, I've got a camera pointed at me. It's quite unique, actually. I've never had an infrared camera pointed at me. We're going to find out why now. Andrew Farrer is one of Cambridge Science Centre's science communicators, and he's joining me this afternoon. Andrew, that looks very foreboding.
Well, thanks for having us. Well, yes, it does look slightly foreboding.
I wish you'd explain to listeners what we got here. So you've connected us, I guess, via, what is that, a USB or an HDMI cable, if it's video, but for those that know about these things. And pointed at me as well, facing at me is a laptop screen from the other side of the studio. And I'm managing to just about hide, so I'll probably be able to move across and not bury myself behind a microphone or a screen. And what I can see, well, I look very red in the face. Well, I do at the best of times, Andrew, but what is this all about? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Phil. So this is one of our infrared cameras, and we're going to have it out at the Twilight of the Museums event that's coming up 2 weeks today. And we are doing the science at sundown. So as you said, we're talking all about light, but we're going to include the types of light that we can't see, which is ultraviolet and infrared. And this infrared camera here, what it's picking up is actually infrared radiation that's coming out of your body. And we most commonly know this actually as heat vision. So you can see that, as you said, very warm in the face, but your shoulders there are a bit cooler down, hidden by your shirt. That's it.
I'm moving up, actually, hunching my shoulders, and it's quite difficult here because, of course, I've got a big microphone in the way. I've got wearing headphones anyway, but they show as blue, so that's presumably, Andrew, that I'm showing my cool aspect. Well, obviously not physically part of me, but being around me. And then, interestingly, there's a sort of corona, can we call that, which is a kind of a little kind of, for the listeners here, that is green, which ends up being amber, I guess, before the red. It almost implies that I'm cooler there, but when I think about it, it's my hair, so presumably that's doing some insulation.
Yes, so where the camera is pointing directly at your skin, we're getting all of that body heat that's generated by your body. And as you go up through your hair, you're cooling down until we sort of leave the very tips of your hair are right, completely blue on the camera, which just shows that they're the coolest point of your body at the moment.
Your body, normally, if you're a healthy person, you haven't got a fever going or anything like that, the typical temperature for a healthy adult, 37.1 degrees Celsius, but that's not the temperature on my face, is it?
No, the 37 is the core body temperature, so it's where all of your internal organs are operating at. Perfect temperature for sort of all the biology in our body to be happening. But on the outside, yeah, we're much cooler. We're sort of around the 20 degrees mark, depending on the weather outside, of course. We'll send more heat to our skin if we're exercising, we're trying to lose heat from our body. And we'll have less heat on the outside of our body if we're cold and our body's trying to conserve heat.
So you're pointing a special infrared camera at me at the moment. And this takes us to the wider topic, which you're using, the science behind light. Now, I remember this acronym. Well, we're taught it in physics at school. Now, do you remember this as well as the listener? Roy Gabib, which was Robin of York gained battle in vain, which was red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo and violet. So if we start off with the red, and we do, you remember your light spectrum, folks? So you go down below what we can see as human beings, the visible light spectrum, and below that, which is a higher, higher wavelength. This is trying to bamboozle everybody. It's about 1050 nanometers. We go into the infrared, which the sun is a great, that big atomic furnace, which has popped out in the sky today in Cambridge, beautiful, is emitting a lot of infrared at us, but we can't see that.
We can't see it now. So the sun, as you say, is emitting a huge amount of energy, which we call the electromagnetic radiation. And our body, our eyes, is able to pick up just a very small portion of that energy. And so the lowest level of energy we can see, our brain perceives as the color red, which is the first color in the rainbow, and the highest level of energy we can see is the violet. But all of these other energy spectrums exist on both sides. So the reason we call it infrared, infra meaning below, is that energy, exactly as you said, the energy level just below the red, just below what our eyes can pick up. But it's been emitted by the sun. It's also emitted by anything that's got a higher temperature. It needs to get rid of that heat.
And one of the ways it does that is radiation. Cup of coffee would really sort of flare up on your camera if it's nice and warm.
Exactly. So, and we're all, you know, aware of leaving a cup of coffee on the side and it going cold. The reason it's gone cold is it's lost all of that heat energy by emitting it as radiation. And one of the forms of the radiation is that infrared, which is why we see, or why we commonly know infrared as heat vision, because hot things are giving off a lot of that temperature.
And at the other end of the optical spectrum for our eyes as human beings, I believe, tell me if I'm right, Andrew, that our eyes are actually optimized for the colour green as human beings.
Yes, well, we have three colour receptors in our eyes, which colour red, green and blue. The green and blue ones are actually quite close together. There's a little bit of odd overlap there, so sometimes our eyes can get bamboozled by those colours. But yes, we actually only see in those three colours, and it's a mixture of all of those three colours that produce all of the different colours, yellow, purple, that we can actually perceive as human beings.
And we find green as a harmony colour as human beings as well. After all, our environment, our natural environment, is green.
It's
probably logical that we're kind of focused more into the blue and green region.
Exactly,
because that's how we would originally hunt and gather in the world around us. And if we come down to the shorter wavelengths, more to, is it sort of 640 nanometers, we come from violet and indigo into blue. So this is the other end from infrared, down into the ultraviolet region.
So getting a higher energy level than the violet. And again, the sun, a massive source of ultraviolet, of which we all know about, because of course we need our sun cream on to make sure that ultraviolet radiation, that energy, isn't hitting into our bodies, bouncing off our DNA and actually sort of causing damage. That's why we have to wear sun cream, to avoid that energy actually being absorbed by our skin.
These invisible rays, Andrew. Does it also mean that some animals, I'm told, isn't it certain fish, is it? And I believe some dogs can see actually beyond the human visible spectrum of...
A lot of animals can see beyond what we can. Reindeer are able to see into that ultraviolet, and it's a way of actually being able to navigate their environment. as lovely as it sounds, their urine will glow in ultraviolet light, and they can spot that. So they can spot the pathways that the other reindeer have taken and follow it around. Bees are another example. So lots of flowers, we see them all, these beautiful colours. When a bee sees it, it's also able to pick up ultraviolet pigments in there, which are actually basically arrows to point to the centre to say this is where the nectar is, so that the bees get right to the centre and get covered in the pollen and help.
So when we see the petals and the stamens, the bees can see, we see these beautiful colours of summer, of course, the spring comes and the plants burst into life. We see these beautiful colours in our gardens and in our parks, but the bees see that very differently.
They see it differently to us, yes. And birds as well can often see very differently. And
Now, I'm going to be a bit of a guinea pig this afternoon with the time we've got remaining. You've given me a beaker of water. It's cold Cambridge tap water. Some of the best in the country.
Absolutely.
Cheers. Now, already we've got me glowing here. I'm not orange. I'm completely red this afternoon. It's quite funny. My lips seem to be the hottest feature on my face, would you say, from what we see at the moment, Andrew?
It is.
And maybe the sort of around the... is it what's called the sputum of the nose? I don't know,
the end
of the nose at the moment.
So you've probably got a very high temperature around your lips because, of course, you're talking on the radio all day. All the muscles around that area are actually very active, so you're generating a lot of heat. So that's for you why you're so red around that area. It's probably just because of your profession.
Yes. Too much talking, probably. Sent me completely on red lips. Now, you're going to make me drink some water.
Drink some cold water, yep.
Get it just make a normal
sure glass.
That it kind That's of the it. Cold water...
covers up the top lip. Enjoy a really big gulp of water. And what we will be able to see...
Sorry, boss, if you're listening, because we're not supposed to be drinking in here, but it's just water. I moved it well away. Oh, my goodness. Now, I've gone blue in the mouth, just like when you get one of those gobstoppers as a kid.
Exactly.
You know, when you take the blue, the safe blue dye. Already, that's changing to a green, which means my mouth is very quickly warming up again.
Exactly. So that cold water absorbs some of that heat energy, which we spotted for a few seconds as your mouth and your upper lip dropping to the blue. But yes, your body temperature is rapidly recovering. And I think we're pretty much back to where we were already. Back to the very red, very yellow around the lips.
Andrew, this is great fun for the kids.
It is great fun, yeah.
Are you going to be doing this at the Cambridge Science Centre? Is this one of the first years you've been able, because you've now got the infrastructure going at Clifton Park where you are, and you're going to be part of this year's Twilight at the Museums event. There are going to be 12 sites across Cambridge. You're working with the university, collaborating on this. The idea is that children will be able to wrap up and some of them will be able to make it over to you guys as well. Is this going to be a free event that evening?
It's absolutely, yes, it's free. So it's from 4:30 till 7:30. This is for all 12 of the museums that you mentioned across Cambridge. It's drop-in, totally free, really aimed at families to come in and explore. Like I said, we'll have our infrared camera, there. We'll have our UV puzzles. We'll have all sorts of stuff. We're a great place to start if you're planning to visit several of the museums, which is really the idea. We're a great place to start. We have lots of like free street parking around the area. So come on down, you know, if you're coming from a bit further, come down, start with us, get some really cool light facts, and then move along to the Botanic Garden and up into the centre of town to see all of the great twilight themes that the museums are running.
Good strategy then, Andrew, to come and see you guys. Maybe make you first at 4 o'clock.
Absolutely,
or something,
yeah.
After school. Get the kids out of school.
Well,
make the most of
term,
the... Yeah,
so we've got we'll have a whole bunch of other exciting special events running through half term, all about the brain and the senses, which this kind of ties into, this idea of light that we can't see beyond our standard senses. So if you can't come on twilight, which we really hope that you can, come along sometime else in the week, and we'll be running all sorts of cool stuff all week.
Especially over half term, they really pull out all the stops there. It's a fantastic place to go. We've also spoken in the past about your Cosmos roadshow tour as you scientists head around, well, East Anglia actually. You head up to King's Lynn, across the Wisbeach. You've been working in Peterborough. I know you came head to head with one of the space capsules that was in Peterborough Cathedral last year.
We were in Peterborough Cathedral with the Soyuz capsule that took Tim Peake up and safely returned him to Earth. So that was really exciting.
Fascinating stuff. As parents listening right now, because as we always say, kids are in school, do go to the Cambridge Science Centre. It is a charitable trust, and they put on some great things. We've met another fantastic member of their staff this morning, one of their science communicators in Andrew Farrer. Do go along to the Twilight of the Museums event. Go online, go to the University of Cambridge's website, but more importantly as well, go to Cambridge Science Centre's website, where you can find out about all the activities that are happening there over the half-term period and the Twilight at the Museums event as well. Well, you can have an infrared camera pointed at you like me, and you can do some secret writing as well to be revealed under ultraviolet light.
That's it.
A lot of fun for kids.
With light.
Andrew, we'll have you back, as we always love to, the Cambridge Science Centre, very regularly. Thanks, Andrew Farrer, for coming in
and joining us
this morning. A lot of fun. First time I've had infrared app. Anyway, thank you very much.